It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Hundreds of people mobbing Chicago's Magnificent Mile, smashing windows and fighting with officers. Crowds hitting several luxury stores for hours. A Tesla dealership also hit by looting. Public transit to the city's downtown area has been suspended. No word right now on any arrests or injuries. All this unrest coming hours after a man was shot by police on the city's south side. Officers say he opened fire during a chase, forcing them to fire back. Angry crowds throwing objects at officers and spraying one with mace. The deputy police chief blamed this man for stirring up the crowds.
The officer shot the man again, even when he told them, "I'm down."
The suspect was brought to a local hospital. No word right now on his condition. The officers involved in the shooting have been placed on administrative duties. And this all comes on the heels of a violent weekend in the city. At least 35 people shot, 3 people killed. Steve Ainslie and Brian, back to you.
All right, Sandy Rios with you, and happy to be so, and just happy. I hope you're doing well, and I look forward to reconnecting with you. Lots of news this morning, maybe a little slower cycle than we're used to because it is August, but lots of things are happening. I see as I look across the country, people are getting, like, finding their voices, and they're beginning to speak out. They are really understanding. Black, white, brown, all kinds of people are saying to themselves, something is wrong with this picture. And you know what? I actually love my country. I actually love my country. I'm going to fight for my country. This is wrong. A lot of Black Americans are talking about how Black Lives Matter has undermined the whole issue of racial injustice and mistreatment and taken it to something very different that they don't recognize, violence and anarchy and destruction of property and people. It's just amazing. And I think a lot of people are waking up. I just want to mention, even in Beverly Hills, there was a rally on Saturday called Rescue America. And there were a lot of people there. I saw a video of it. I saw several videos, actually, people speaking there. So it was sponsored by the Walkaway Foundation, which is founded by a former Democratic guy. I've forgotten his name. He's actually a gay man, Brandon Starka, he's the founder of Walk Away, and they're doing rallies all over the country. But in Beverly Hills, he said they had Make America Great signs all over the place. They marched in Beverly Gardens Park. And he said, Brandon says, "We're doing these rallies because we wanted to show the radical left who's been smashing windows, committing acts of violence, committing acts of vandalism, that they do not own America's streets. We're going to fight for the heart and soul of America." So this is our third one. Next week, we'll be in Milwaukee, and we'll basically be doing Rescue America rallies around the country from now till the end of the year. I recognize some of you are saying, but in your minds, you're saying, but he's gay or he's whatever, fill in the blanks. You know, right now, look, we're fighting for the heart and soul of our nation. We're not making moral judgments. If that's the case, then all of you who've, committed adultery, you better step aside. I mean, I think all of you who've, looked at child porn or pornography at all, better step aside. We are not doing a moral litmus test. We are actually working together on the things that unite us. It has nothing to do with color or anything else. We are trying to save our country. Americans, after all, are united around a set of ideals that are expressed in the Declaration of Independence, in our Constitution. It's just a beautiful, beautiful document. Maybe our kids will really actually rediscover it as these things unfold. You know, maybe sometimes I think these riots and this violence may have done us in some ways a favor. I could see God using this, couldn't you? Couldn't you see, use this? I'm thinking about the public schools and how they have ravaged the education of our children, how they have indoctrinated and ruined and poisoned their minds. And now we're having colleges and universities who are having trouble, you know, some are closing down. They're having trouble meeting budgets. Maybe that's a blessing, you know, maybe we need a purging. Maybe we need teachers who are now in the streets, you know, saying they're not going to go back to school because of the dangers of coronavirus, which we'll get to in just a second. But they're not really worried about that. What they want is what they're talking about, repaying rents. They're talking about, you know, disbanding the police. It's all about the Marxist socialist agenda, which shouldn't be too much of a shock. So maybe those teachers who embrace that viewpoint, maybe they should go the way of, you know, the past. And maybe we need a new start, a new set of schools, a new colleges and universities, a rediscovery, as the prophet rediscovered the, you know, the old tablets. And they're not the same. I am not equating. I am in terms of historical significance. But the reclaiming the Ten Commandments, the teachings of the law, and, you know, the ruined temple, and reading it to the people, and people going, oh, really? Are you kidding me? We didn't know that. I kind of think it'll be that way for our kids, our children, some of you even, because you grew up in the public schools and don't even know the preciousness of this country and the incredible character of the men who founded it and the faith of our fathers, which was Christian faith. So so they did that in Beverly Hills. There's more to say about that, but I'll read to you what Walk Away, this is kind of their byline. I think you should hear it. We're a movement of the people who are walking away from the Democratic Party. We're walking away from the ideology of liberalism, liberal media. Basically, we want to live in a country with peace and civility, truthfulness, kindness. And again, we're not getting that from the political left, so we're walking away from the Democrats. We're walking away from lies, the false narratives, the fake news, the race baiting, the victim narrative, the violence, the vandalism, the vitriol. We are walking away from a party driven by hate. We are walking toward patriotism and a new unified America. We are the future of this great nation. So that's what Walk Away did in Beverly Hills, by contrast of the destructors in Chicago yesterday. Boy, the Magnificent Mile. If you haven't been to Chicago, my hometown, you just can't imagine. I would say that it has rivaled any city in America for beauty. It is absolutely beautiful. It used to be pristine and clean. That particular mile, they call it, on Michigan Avenue, close to the lakeshore, is just exquisite. It's always been safe, beautiful. You could walk around the streets of Chicago downtown all night long and be safe. But no more, because now in the daylight, they are rioting and looting the stores. Because they have such a dreadful governor and a dreadful mayor of that city. So meanwhile, what else is happening? Thousands of bikers are gathered in South Dakota. That's the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, and they've driven from all over the country. We hear this morning, I read this morning, that the Cheyenne River Sioux checkpoints, they have like several tribes, have decided to stop these groups. They say because of COVID, they won't let them pass through. So now they're in a battle with the governor of the state of South Dakota, Kristi Noem, who supports this rally. Some bikers have already been turned back. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to go. But that's what's happening out there, just the kind of fight that people are showing out there. But I want to sort of turn into now people who are churches, which has been my big concern, that churches have been so compliant. No grit, no fight, just go along to get along, and that's really bothered me. I haven't had a specific suggestion. I am not one for law breaking, but now we're at that point. John MacArthur out in California, you know, John MacArthur, the famous author and speaker who's been like a hallmark of strong, powerful biblical teaching for decades now. John, who said, it used to annoy me because he felt that Christians should not be involved in politics at all. And now John, with his beautiful church in California, is caught in the crosshairs of total, radical, out-of-control governance. And so John is now with the attorneys who you've heard with me before. We're going to talk to them, not today, but soon, is defying the state's orders to shut down. In fact, he's in danger of jail time, all kinds of things. It's becoming an untenable situation. And so John is now suing the state of California. I'm not sure who all he's suing, but they're down to a showdown. Paul, John MacArthur, who for all these years did not think that there should be political involvement by Christians, is now finding himself right in the thick of it. I don't say that. If you think for a minute that I'm saying that because I think that serves him right or something to that effect, I'm not at all. I'm so happy that he's standing up. I'm so happy. I say, pastors, look at John MacArthur. He's taught you scripture so faithfully all these years. Now look at him and emulate his courage. And that reminds me of a couple of other pastors. Pastor Rob McCoy on Godspeak Calvary Church. They opened their doors last Sunday, and they have been forbidden to worship. But I want you to hear what he had to say in the minutes that we have here. This is Rob McCoy talking to his congregation. He's actually doing it on video about what's going to happen. Let's listen to clip 10.
He had presented the idea that 1/100 of 1% of the population of Ventura County, that's the death rate. Tragic as it is, the little over 80 of our citizens who have died. But the part that we're taking into consideration is that businesses have been shuttered. 65% of our restaurants won't reopen. Family businesses have been destroyed. Our children have been shuttered out of schools. The trauma upon them, and as we've had psychologist Dr. Sean A. Anderson and a number of others come and share the ramifications of these draconian measures. And then in addition, our county supervisors, especially the three I listed, which is Linda Parks and John Zaragoza and Steve Bennett, releasing convicts into our streets, and now they're coming to arrest Christians who want to worship God. What's happened in America? We haven't had one case of COVID-19 in our church. We've been open since May 31st. We presented all the issues. We've looked at the data. We've had 130 hours of live stream with over 7 doctors testifying. We've done our homework, and yet we're silenced. That brings us to the place where we are now. As a church, we have been ordered by the judge to remain closed. This building, by judge's orders, is not to be occupied by Rob McCoy or 1 to 1,000 does. And I wish it didn't have to come to this. I really do. But we will be violating the judge's order. We will be open this Sunday. Now, I don't know what that means as far as who's going to stop us, but we're planning on having services at 9, 11, and 1. We're going to keep worshiping God. If they seek to arrest me and the 1,000 of you, it's almost like the first 1,000 get a prize. You get a citation. It's a misdemeanor. You want to be one of the 1,000? Come.
All right, so he goes on to tell them. He's in danger of arrest. They opened the church yesterday. I honestly don't know what happened yesterday. So I'm just telling you, this was leading up to yesterday's service. Now, in California, the governor banned singing first in indoor religious services. And then he banned those services altogether. And that's when John MacArthur retained Tom Brecca and the Thomas More Society, the Law Society. Tom's been my guest so many times. He's a very dear friend of mine. So we'll be talking about that case. Also, Governor Newsom has threatened to cut off power to any church that continues to meet in person. By the way, a network of California churches sued him last month, and many churches throughout the state of California have vowed to hold in-person worship services. You may know that just, 2 weeks ago, John Roberts, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, sided with the liberals and upheld a state of Nevada's coronavirus restrictions, allowing casinos to remain open while shuttering churches. Did you remember that? So Justice Gorsuch and Samuel Alito wrote really powerful, scathing opinions in opposition of that. But there's no reason to think that if it goes back to the court, that these pastors will have any luck whatsoever in our current configuration of the Supreme Court. So what you just heard was, again, Rob McCoy, pastor of Godspeak Calvary Church. Now, I want to tell you something really incredible happening in Oregon. It happened over the weekend, and we'll do that when we return. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Since Roe versus Wade, over 60 million babies' lives have been taken. And now, with abortion to term, preborn babies' lives are at even greater risk. The Ministry of Preborn stands in the gap with young moms in crisis, helping them to choose life. When a young mom in crisis sees her baby on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
When I saw my baby for the first time on ultrasound, I was scared. I had to keep my baby.
Preborn clinics are the largest providers of free ultrasounds in the USA and the direct competition to Planned Parenthood, helping moms to make the right choice. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds are $140. Join with Preborn in the cause for life. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say the keyword baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for David Bernhardt, United States Secretary of the Interior. His department is responsible for the management of federal lands and the management of natural resources. Psalm 104:5 reminds us that the earth and all its resources are God's creation. He set the earth on its foundations. It can never be moved. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for David Bernhardt as he leads the U.S. Department of the Interior. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
These challenging times have shown a college degree is more important than ever. But if the loss of Virginia's tuition assistance grant for certain new online students is holding you back, Liberty University is here to help. We're stepping in to replace your lost VTAG funds with our LU Tag Award and combining it with a $3,600 undergraduate transfer student scholarship or our already low first responder and military discounts to save you up to 60% on your degree. We've got this, Virginia. Learn more by texting LU Tag to 49595. That's LU Tag to 49595.
NBC News reports the NFL and the NFL Players Association have agreed on strict policies to ensure players practice personal responsibility during the China virus pandemic. Among other things, football players are not allowed to attend indoor church services that allow attendance above 25% capacity. Any Christian athletes caught violating the policy could face fines. The policy also bans players from attending indoor nightclubs, indoor bars, and indoor house parties. Any player testing positive for the China virus after attending a church service or any other banned activity would not be paid for missed games. Now, while the NFL frowns upon church attendance, they have no problem with players attending massive protests against police officers. As a matter of fact, the NFL actually encourages that activity, so you can protest, but you can't pray. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern on ToddStarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'm excited to share with you some good news from Portland. Last night we gathered thousands of people that came together. The church showed up in Waterfront Park, and we don't have the total estimate, somewhere between 4,000 and 7,000 is what they're estimating. And we gathered together, white, black, Hispanic. We released our song of hope over this city. People gave their life to Jesus, hundreds of people. We baptized people in the river behind us. And I mean, it was so much joy that took over the streets of that city last night.
That was the voice of Sean Fecht, I think his name is. It's F-E-U-C-H-T. He is a worship leader in California. And he's describing what happened, guess where? In Portland. In Portland, thousands of worshipers came out in a public park just a few blocks from where the city declared a riot that very same night, where they lit up a police precinct. And so much... You know, and they call their meeting Riots to Revival. Riots to Revival. I saw a little bit of it. There was a lot of people. Waterfront Park in Portland, Oregon, meeting, of course, despite the COVID restrictions. In fact, they were violating COVID restrictions, raising their hands in worship and singing, and again, riots to revivals. And Sean has said they were to take this. He's been doing this on the beaches of California for a while, just trying to wake up the churches in California. You know, it's so, I used to live in California. Maybe some of you have. What a, just the most beautiful state, really, probably the most beautiful state in this 50-state union. I know some would argue with that, but honestly, for variety and the different kinds of even climates from the northern to the southern, the mountains, it's everything. It's beautiful. It used to be a pristine, gorgeous, beautiful state that was, you know, governed by sane people, including Ronald Reagan in the past. And now it's turned into like a, well, it was for a time then became like a paradise, and I think people became so lax in, it was the whatever state, whatever, you know, whatever. Everything goes, anything goes, and it just became, and then of course then it became really hostile. Hollywood turned sour somehow. And then I think so you got the whatevers and the hostile leftists. But I think that, you know, we've got Christian people out there who have, you know, along with the rest of the population are enjoying the beauties of the state and have not fought like they should have either. So, I mean, there are exceptions. We've got David Jeremiah, for heaven's sake. We've got John McCarthy. We have other leaders, Johnny Erickson Tatis from California. So there are really strong people who love God in California. I'm not saying that. But I think by and large, the church has been asleep. And so Sean has been going around to the beaches and having these outdoor worship services trying to wake people up. And now he's moved to, I don't know anything about him, so don't ask me questions if you write to me and say, did you know? I don't know. All I know is I saw him on Fox and Friends, and I heard what he said that I just played you. And they were going to Seattle last night. They're going to the areas where there are problems. And they are providing this outlet, this spiritual awakening. He said, I think he said in that clip that people were being baptized, coming to Christ. It's just amazing. And so they're calling it again, riots to revival. Now then, here's the thing. You can imagine that it might not have been reported that way on local television. And so, in fact, I'll give you an example of how Sean's worship rally was reported. This is clip 9.
Now raise a hallelujah.
In defiance of coronavirus guidelines, hundreds of people crowded together at Portland's Waterfront Park to see worship leader and political activist Sean Foyt. The vast majority in the crowd did not wear masks.
Any concerns?
No, my faith's in God, not fear of that. I'm good.
We're not big mask people, so it doesn't bother us.
I think we come knowing what the risks are and, you know, come like, you know, just on our own, knowing, hey, we're putting either we put ourselves at risk or...
The controversial faith leader has held similar outdoor services on the beaches in California, despite lockdown restrictions there.
We saw the amazing things that have been happening in California, so we're super excited for that to happen here.
Organizers dubbed this event Riots to Revival and said they hope to, quote, flip the script by bringing worship, prayer, and acts of kindness to Portland.
I believe tonight is a turning point. We need it. Not just in Portland, we need it across our nation.
Many of those we spoke with were from out of town, including Longview and Central Oregon.
And most of us are just here for this and then we're leaving, so I don't think it's going to have an impact on Portland. But I don't know, I'm not a scientist.
State rules clearly note faith gatherings are capped at 50 people, with physical distancing for indoors or outdoors. This event was obviously in violation of that. After the nearly three-hour worship service and revival, we tried to speak with Foyt.
I'm Kyle Bush with KGW Channel 8.
Yeah.
Oh.
This event was clearly in violation of state rule prohibiting large social gatherings. How do you respond to that?
Let's get a picture.
Yeah. How do you respond to that, sir?
All right. So that was the report. You know, and of course, all they can talk about is COVID. It's like this COVID madness. I find myself looking at... when I'm watching television now and I see people all masked up, and especially in D.C. and New York, I think, that's so yesterday. You know, what are you still doing with this going crazy about masks? Why are you doing that? But I guess it's because they're, you know, listening to the news and watching, you know, reading things like this is out of This is out of the Wall Street Journal. Face masks really do matter. The scientific evidence is growing. All right, it's a long article about how the scientific evidence is growing, and I was sent an interesting article. It was actually a video by a professor from Dr. Perry Wilson. He's a doctor from Yale School of Medicine, in which he his title of his talk is "Ethically, the Choice is Clear." And he talks about how the studies show that, you know, hydroxychloroquine is ineffective. It doesn't work. He goes through all of this stuff, and he's very happy, very smiley. And I looked at that video. I mean, he's very convincing, because what do I know? He's talking about a lot of numbers, a lot of medical things. So I can't really counter him on that. How can I do that? But I just was listening to him speak, Dr. Perry Wilson, who sounds so convincing, except for his smile, which was a kind of a clue to me that he was a little bit too happy that hydroxychloroquine wasn't effective. Because if it was effective, it would save people's lives, right? And wouldn't a doctor like that? Why would you be happy to announce that it has very little effect? But he was happy. And so that caused me to kind of look a little bit, and I looked and I looked and I saw that there's a bookcase behind him. A lot of people do their, you know, their video chats with their bookcase behind them, and he certainly did. And I noticed that one of the books that he's reading, or that he, you know, puts proudly on his bookshelf, is called Twilight of American Sanity. A psychiatrist analyzes the age of Trump. And that was one of the books that Dr. Wilson had behind him. And then I looked up this book to see what it was about, and this is how it's described. A landmark book from one of the world's most prominent psychiatrists. Alan Francis analyzes the nation, viewing the rise of Donald J. Trump as a darkly symptomatic of a deeper societal distress that must be understood if we are to move forward. It is comforting to see President Donald Trump as a crazy man, a one-off, an exception, not a reflection on us or our democracy. But in ways I never anticipated, his rise was absolutely predictable and a mirror on our soul. What does it say about us that we elected someone so manifestly unfit and unprepared to determine mankind's future? So Dr. Perry Wilson from the Yale School of Medicine, smiling as he delivers information on how ineffective hydrochloroquine is, has an opinion about President Trump. Does that surprise you? And that it shouldn't surprise you, because that's where we live right now. All right, so I want to tell you there is the article, the white paper, that was written by the doctors that the Tea Party Patriots feature, that we played quite a bit of their video. They did that presentation in front. They did a press conference, and they did a long presentation, and we played quite a bit of that, at least some of it. It was too long to play quite a bit of it, but some of it. Dr. Simone Gold is the one who convened that group, and they presented a white paper on the uses of hydroxychloroquine, because that's one of the things. There was like a dozen of them. They're from all over the country, you know, with very, you know, reputable positions. And they talked about the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine. That's one of the main things they talked about and presented this paper. Well, guess what? Would it surprise you? Would it surprise you to think that, first of all, you know that that video of the doctors was removed by Twitter. President Trump was, you know, taken off of Twitter because he retweeted it. Don Jr. was, you know, locked out of Twitter because he retweeted it. Facebook took it down. Isn't that interesting? You know, you can't even, I mean, let's just say they're right. This is that doctor from Yale, Dr. Wilson, is right. It has no effect at all. But if another doctor, several doctors think it does have an effect, and their experience has been, it's been very good for their patients, they're not allowed to say that. They're not allowed to say that. Would that not be a red flag to you? I mean, you think maybe that should be a red flag? Dr. Simone Gold, who is the convener of that group of doctors, was with Glenn Beck in an interview just a couple of days ago, and I want you to hear what's happened to her. Let's listen. Clip 15.
So I work, most emergency physicians work at more than one place, and I do, and I've actually been fired from both. And it's exciting, fun times living in America in 2020. They told me that I appeared in an embarrassing video, and therefore I would no longer be welcome to work there. That's exactly what I want to share with you, which I haven't said to anybody else. I fixed them. You really ought to place me on administrative leave till the whole thing quiets down and things will go back to normal. Not only do they decline that, okay, they said that if I didn't go quietly into the good night, they would pull the contract for the whole group of doctors. So emergency doctors work like as a group for hospitals. So the group is always vulnerable to losing a contract with the hospital. So they've said to the hospital has said to the group, if she doesn't go, we're going to pull the contract from the group. It's really terrible. It's just really, it's just really terrible. They didn't even object to what I was doing. They objected to some other people in the video. Then they said that if I don't go quietly and I make a fuss, then they're going to have all the doctors in the group, you know, have to go. Like they'll just get a whole new doctor group, as if it's so easy, which it's not.
All right, so that's Dr. Simone Gold. She was the convener of that group, 2 weeks ago? And she's lost both of her jobs in emergency rooms. I believe it's in California. Yeah, so I wonder, you know, if it's true that hydroxychloroquine does not have any effect, but it does no harm. It's been in the market for, I think, 65 years to treat other things. The FDA, you know, it went through all the rigors of FDA testing and passed muster and does not harm people. I know there were some studies that said it did, but those turned out to be... The New England Journal of Medicine had to retract the study that they did, which is cited by many, that shows the hydrochloroquine is damaging. And also the Lancet Journal, same thing. Turned out their information was false, and they had to retract their famous studies, those famous outlets for medical people. And so now here's a new study. It is one... The study shows that hydroxychloroquine can provide a 50 to 70% chance of recovery from the China coronavirus. Despite what you previously heard, new studies provide almost overwhelming proof of the opposite. Everyone owes it to themselves and their loved ones to do their homework so they understand the real truth about current treatment options based on the most likely or timely and credible information. For yours and your loved one's sake, I urge you not to make a life and death decision based on politics or inaccurate news reporting. This is an article by Joe Hoft. And so it's an article, a peer-reviewed study published July 2nd of 2020 in one of the most prestigious and relevant to medical journals in the world. It's the International Journal of Infectious Diseases. It's found that, in fact, administering hydroxychloroquine by itself early during a hospitalization cuts down death rate by half from the raw data. And so they also talk about, and I've talked to you about this too, that it's when you give hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin and zinc sulfate, it's a combination that's very cheap. It has been very, very effective. I'm not going to read all the stats on this, but we will make this article available to you. Despite the media lies, study shows hydroxychloroquine can provide 50 to 70% chance of recovery. I'll give you an anecdote that's pretty interesting. This is another Democrat. There was a female black Democratic state representative, Karen Whitsitt from Michigan, came out, a few months ago and said the hydroxychloroquine saved her life. Well, now, out of New York, this will kill the governor of New York, the drug hydroxychloroquine was instantly transformed. This is from, what am I reading from? I'm not sure the outlet, sorry. The drug hydroxychloroquine was instantly transformed into a political football the moment President Donald Trump said the malaria medication could be a game changer. That was March the 19th. Since being hopeful about the drug, Trump's adversaries have been completely against hydroxychloroquine, while his supporters are optimistic that the medicine could help fight against COVID-19. Democratic New York City Councilman Paul Vallone credits hydroxychloroquine as saving his life as he fought against the lethal respiratory disease. He represents Queens. He told the New York Post that hydroxychloroquine basically saved my life. He has another condition called sarcoidosis, it's an incurable autoimmune disease which affects the lungs and lymph glands. He said he took the hydroxychloroquine with the flu Z-Pack. Within a week, he was back on his feet. He said at the time, there was fear and panic, but I'm so grateful. And so his brother wrote, who's a judge, big money does not want this drug to be used. Always follow the money. So inconveniently, another Democrat has actually taken it and found it very beneficial. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute. No way.
There's a way. The Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word. And we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Look briefly at one of your fingers. You've just witnessed one of the greatest displays of God's creative intent there is. No other person in all the world, even an identical twin, shares your fingerprint. God specifically designed each of us to be unique. That means we shouldn't try to carbon copy anyone else in the Christian faith. If God made you an arm in His body or a kneecap, praise be to our glorious God for drawing us to become a part of His body. How freeing it is to realize that we were never meant to copy anyone but Jesus.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Jesus Himself said that there are only two genders. He who created them from the beginning made them male and female, Matthew 19:4. Everyone is born either male or female, and science agrees. But the folly that people can change genders still persists. A 2019 study declared that the surgical mutilation that accompanies transgenderism is good for the mental health of patients. Now the authors of that study admit they were wrong. While the study claimed the odds of being treated for mood and anxiety disorders dropped after surgery, now they admit that those who undergo this surgery, quote, are more likely to be treated for anxiety disorders than those who didn't have the surgery at all. God created the male and female. That was true at the dawn of creation, and it's still true today.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The so-called dog days of August can be a dangerous time. Enemies of freedom often deliberately choose this window to engage in dangerous and sometimes game-changing aggression. The Chinese Communist Party seems to be following that playbook now. Fresh from its murderous incursion into India and its crushing of freedom in Hong Kong, the CCP is engaging in large-scale exercises that look like cover for an invasion of Taiwanese islands and perhaps Taiwan itself. Massive Chinese fishing fleets with vessels that could be armed among them are heading into waters controlled by Japan and those of our own hemisphere's pristine Galapagos Islands controlled by Ecuador. Throw into the mix the ongoing effects of the CCP's biological assault deliberately unleashed on this country and the party's increasingly brazen efforts to prevent President Trump's re-election, and this August may literally be an explosive one. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, so I have to finish up on this coronavirus thing. I won't be finished, you know, because this is going to go on until the day after the election, so I can't finish as much as I'd like to. But here's the headline in Fox. U.S. tops 5 million coronavirus cases, continues to lead the world in infections and deaths. Now, that sounds really bad to me, doesn't it, to you? I mean, I'm frightened out of my mind. The U.S., what are we? We're the laughingstock of the world, thanks to Fox and other headlines, because we've so mismanaged this, right? That's what that means, right? People are dying everywhere, right? Are people dying everywhere in your life? I'm just curious. You know, the last I looked, the plagues, mass measles outbreaks, like at the turn of the century. Everybody was affected. Polio, when I was a kid, you knew somebody. And even that was less than, you know, some of these other, you know, plagues, where you saw your neighbors carried out in body bags or your children that died. You know, they are one, two, three of them got sick and died. Those are serious crises. This is nothing. This is a hangnail of death. Look, it's embarrassing to me. Don't we know that people die? People die all the time. People die of flu more than they die of coronavirus. And yet we don't go around and take everyone's temperature and make sure we don't touch each other, because you might, you know, have a flu or the common cold for that matter. Because if you are really elderly and sick and having trouble breathing, even a cold can kill you. We have lost our collective minds. We have lost our collective minds. I saw a missionary present yesterday. He was talking about, in his country, the work they're doing. And he spent half of his report talking about COVID. And then he drops in the middle of his report, that in his country, there were no cases. There haven't been any cases. But they're social distancing and they're doing all these things that want you to know that, you know, they're complying. It's just, it's madness. It's madness. It's madness. So here we go with Fox. Let me just, why do I think this is like silly? I can only point out a couple of things in the time that I have. We have reached the U.S. reached 5 million coronavirus cases on Sunday, continuing to lead the world as the nation with the highest number of infections. Now, that would be equivalent. Just put in, okay, flu, that we had 5 million cases of the flu. Now, they're not talking about people that are sick. They're talking about people carrying the virus. Some symptomatic, some asymptomatic. You can't put all those in the same category, and you can't call them infections. You know, infections, like when you get sick, you have a fever, you're coughing, you get something, but just because you test positive, and we are testing people like crazy, you know, there are people lined up to take the test. They can't wait. I don't understand that. The test is very uncomfortable, for one thing, and it doesn't mean anything. Well, now, what? Look, I take that back. If you are having symptoms, this is what I should say more clearly. If you've got symptoms and you're concerned, yes. But if you're asymptomatic, you're walking around doing your life and you just want to know, just maybe I might be carrying it, there's just no need to do that. You may never get it. You probably won't get it. Most people don't get it. And if you tested positive, that's only good for like till the next time you touch someone, then you might get it. That might be an hour from then, 2 hours from then. You just should take one every 60 seconds to make sure you don't have COVID. That's how silly it is. But I want to go on. America has the world's highest death toll of more than 160,000, according to a tally by Johns Hopkins. We also have a huge population. That is a ridiculous statement. We have 331 million people. In this article, they cite Brazil. Globally, Brazil trails the U.S. with the second most confirmed cases in the world. But Brazil only has 213 million. The United States has 331 million. And cases don't mean sick people. It says in this article that the death rate's going up. I don't believe that. I didn't have time to check it. I'll just be honest with you. I have not. But the last time I looked before I left to be out of town, the death rate was not going up. Maybe in some isolated places, but in most places, absolutely not. The cases, so-called cases, were going up, but the death rate was going down. And I want to show you why I'm such a skeptic, in case you needed more evidence. Did you hear about that 7-year-old boy in Georgia who died from COVID-19? He died from COVID-19. That's what they told us. Remember, children, the inference, of course, is, you know, we shouldn't open school, that it's not true that children don't get infected because there's a 7-year-old boy in Georgia. And, of course, in Georgia, where, you know, the governor there hasn't been doing the shutdown like the other leftist extremists want him to do. So it has to be in his state, of course, because I think he was trying to open schools, too. So a 7-year-old has died from COVID. That's what they told us. All the news outlets, they told, in fact, Tyler Durden wrote this, and he said, like Fox News, virtually all of the media repeatedly reported that the child had no underlying conditions. He said, even on my local radio station, repeating the deception every 30 minutes for hours on end, which, among other conservative programming, carries Rush Limbaugh, helped perpetuate this latest example of Wuhan virus fear porn. And that's what a lot of people call it. I think I've mentioned it, panic porn, fear porn. So what did he die of? Well, let's see. Finally, we see that WTOC reporter Syria Sandlin provided some details. It seems that he died as a result of a seizure and a fall in the shower. Prior to his death, the child had zero Wuhan virus symptoms. But after he was pronounced dead, they did a rapid test that showed evidence of COVID-19 positivity. Now, here's the thing. He had a seizure and fell in the shower. Has anyone here heard that people who get COVID have seizures, or the onset of them is a seizure? I don't think so. But, of course, that bit of the story was downplayed and you didn't hear about it. And I just got something else in my inbox. I don't know the details of this, but a nurse in Wellington, Ohio, was listed as dying of COVID-19. But it turns out the autopsy showed that she died of a kidney infection. You see why I don't trust the numbers? How can we trust these numbers? How can we trust the numbers when in Florida alone, 300 different labs said that in the tests that they were doing, COVID tests, 100% of the thousands of people they tested positive. 1,000%. This is, we've lost our minds. I wanted one last thing on this COVID. One of the largest studies in the world on coronavirus in schools carried out in 100 institutions in the United Kingdom will confirm that there is very little evidence that the virus is transmitted in schools. Professor Russell Viner, president of the Royal College of Pediatrics and Child Health and a member of the government advisory group SAGE, said a new study that has been done in UK schools confirms there is very little evidence that the virus is transmitted in school. The article goes on to say about 20,000 pupils and teachers in 100 schools across England tested to monitor the spread of the disease up to the end of the summer term. Viner, 57, says a full reopening of the schools is imperative. He warns that children have lost friendships, missed months of lessons, and will suffer long-term social, mental, and academic problems as schools stay closed. For teenagers in particular, being cut off from their peers is bad for their development. All right, there's a lot more to this group, but I just wanted to read that part to you. So that's coming out of the UK. That's shut down more than the US is, by the way. The madness is more mad. There could be more madness over there. Professor Russell Viner, president of the Royal College of Pediatrics and Child Health, says that schools must open. There's no evidence that cases are spread there. So, so that's enough about COVID, don't you think? That's enough. All right, so last night, Mark Levin interviewed the Attorney General Bill Barr, and they talked a little bit about the hearing last week. I think we have time to listen to this. Let's listen to this back and forth because it's worth listening to. Clip 11.
I was a chief of staff to an Attorney General, Edwin Meese. We had some very difficult hearings from time to time. I've never seen anything like this before. Obviously, it was coordinated. The goal was to have you up there and try and treat you like a pinata. Absolutely disrespectful. What were you thinking what that was going on, and what do you make of this? You've been Attorney General twice now.
I think they were afraid to have me speak, and so they decided to burn up all the time and not give me any time to answer. So I quickly caught on to the tactic.
And what do you make of the change of the whole nature of hearings now? I mean, they accused you of being a murderer, a terrorist. I was getting nervous that somebody might grab a Molotov cocktail from behind the table and throw it at you. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, I have the perspective of having been Attorney General 30 years ago and now, and I thought things were partisan and tough 30 years ago. Nothing compared to today. Things have fundamentally changed. And I think what has happened, and I've been thinking about this, because, you know, in the old days, you could have friends across the aisle. You know, politics was part of your life, but it wasn't all-consuming. It wasn't everything. You could, you know, have communications and so forth with others. But it's now become all-consuming for many people. And I think what's happened is that the left wing has really withdrawn and pulled away from the umbrella of classical liberal values that have undergirded our society since our founding. And, you know, when within the family, we've had two ways of resolving disputes. One is discussion, the dialectic, the marketplace of ideas, trying to arrive at the truth. We had an idea that there was some truth to arrive at. And then if we couldn't reach agreement, a vote. And that's how we operated. Nowadays, you have, I think, the left has essentially withdrawn from this model and really represents a Rousseauian revolutionary party that believes in tearing down the system, that what's wrong about America today all has to do with the institutions we have, and we have to tear them down. And they're interested in complete political victory. They're not interested in compromise. They're not interested in dialectic exchange of views. They're interested in total victory. And it's a secular religion. It's a substitute for a religion. They view their political opponents and they, as evil, that because we stand in the way of their progressive utopia that they're trying to reach. And that's what gives, the intensity to the partisan feelings that people feel today, because for them, this pilgrimage we're all on is a political pilgrimage. Everything is reduced to politics. For people who don't have that perspective, politics is important, but it's not the whole purpose of life.
That was William Barr, our Attorney General, with Mark Levin last night. Excellent, powerful interview. He's got so much wisdom. And of course, he's saying what I think I've said this to you. I'm pretty sure I've said this to other people because it's true. We have a whole generation of kids and their parents, and maybe even beyond that, maybe in the 60s growing up, people who have grown up in a vacuum of the knowledge of God. They haven't been taught about God. Pascal said that all of us are shaped, come with a God-shaped vacuum that only God can fill. And so because there's a vacuum there, nothing to live for, what do you live for? What do you get up for every morning? What drives your passion? What do you care about? What guides you? What focuses you so that you know what to join and who to be and what to study? How do you make decisions in life about children and buying a house and who to marry and, all of that? How do you make those decisions without something within you? That's a guiding set of values and purposes, and of course, God delivers the ultimate, because He's the designer of this whole world, the designer of us, and He understands what's best for us better than any other entity. So, because of there's the vacuum, I think that this kind of radical leftism has invaded like a cancer the empty hearts and souls of many of Americans who have been the product of weak churches. Hypocritical upbringing, just not solid biblical teaching. And that ties in with the foundings of the country because they've been denied and rewritten and removed from understanding and knowledge. And so they are rushing. This gives them something to live for the first time for many people. I'll be talking, by the way, Friday with Dr. Paul Kinger about his new book, The Devil and Karl Marx. It's a fascinating book he's just written, but he talks about, the literal devilish roots of communism and what attracts people to it, what happened with Karl Marx, and the power of it. And so I hope you'll tune in with us on Friday. Listen, thanks for listening, and appreciate your patience as I've been gone. It's nice to be back. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.